bringing you around the world right from your desktop. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
I am Valerie Kirkgaard. I am your host, and I'm delighted to be with you here today. We've been doing this on the air for almost 20 years now. We've been talking about social concern situations on the planet. Many different people have represented points of view of things that I know have helped educate me, and I hope you've gotten the good learning from it, too. We have a team of radio editors here who are very informed on a variety of subjects, all the way from Cherie Ross in the Essential Oils to Lisa Molson, who gives tips on families, and she's really done the family thing very well. Debbie Ringchop, who is our insurance and a financial presenter for us. J.J. Virgin, who does, she's going to be talking to you about bones today. George Rucheski, who shows you where leadership fits in your life. So we've got an amazing show planned for you today. We've actually got Gail Ellen up in Alaska. She'll be calling in, and we've got Ed Begley Jr. on, who's helping us. He's a segment in our series on the life and the contributions of Dennis Weaver, and Ed Begley and I are proud to have been on Dennis's friend list. And each one of us stands for something. We each have a mission in our lives, and Dennis became the spoke for that mission. And so did the Institute of Ecolonomics, because the Institute of Ecolonomics was such a grand way to bring together so many different ideas. So what I'm inviting you to do is, this is a live show on Wednesdays. If you're listening to us on the Internet right now, you're hearing us live. If you are listening at another time in one of our other stations, hey, what can I tell you? Email us, because you want to catch us live. It's Wednesdays at noon, California time. So we've had Bob Sercosta on the show, and he's that very rich man that has made it all with home shopping, and he says that this radio will change the world, okay? It will. But what we're doing is a conversation that makes a huge difference, but it only makes a huge difference if we all keep sharing it and sharing it and sharing it. So the more people you can send to the website at wakingupatamerica.com, those numbers add up for us. Right now we've got over 850,000 listeners a month listening to Waking Up in America. We started out with a little low, around 3,000 or 4,000 a few years back. There's been different things that have happened in the course of this adventure. So right now the numbers are growing, and we need to have them grow more. We just recently had a sign-up from India. We've got people listening to us in Spain. So what we're talking about is a Waking Up in America conversation, but a lot of the world is agreeing that it's a conversation that's needed for the world, especially if you happen to have been seeing the LA Times, and I hope it's online so every one of you can check up on it. Starting this Sunday, the LA Times has been running a series of articles on what's happening in the oceans of the world, and it's absolutely dumbfounding, horrifying, okay? And it just doesn't stop when you see the condition that we're in. So I'm going to be asking Ed about that today. I'm also going to be asking him about his relationship with Dennis and how that affected him, and I'm also going to be asking him about the electric car. I actually kind of want to start out with that. So welcome to Waking Up in America, Ed. We're just delighted to have you here.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
And I saw your handsome blonde hair, you know, when I was watching the electric car, and I went, there's Ed Begley. So tell us about that movie, Who Killed the Electric Car? And I know you had one of them, didn't you?
I had one for years. I got my EV1 in 1996, and the first one had just lead-acid batteries, and it had a range of about 70-some-odd miles. The next one had nickel-metal hydride batteries, had a range of about 140 miles, and they had a level of consumer satisfaction with that vehicle that was off the charts. They literally had a huge problem getting the cars back from people to pry them from their cold hands.
So that was General Motors, right?
Yeah, General Motors had that car, and a very good car it was. It was a sports car. It was a two-seater. To be honest, they had no problem getting mine back from me. I turned it in ahead of schedule because I had a baby in 1999. So it was 2002. I had the baby in 1999. By 2002, I was ready to, get a car that had you know, the possibility of a car seat, you know, in the back.
Right.
And so I, you know, I got rid of it a year ahead of schedule, and I've been driving a Toyota RAV4 ever since. It's a pure electric. So there were other electrics available, and Toyota...
Toyota RAV4 isn't available anymore, is it?
No, you can't get that one now. They were even crushing those for a while, and there was a huge outcry about that. And Toyota, very wisely, I think they're a very good car company. They said, okay, well, if you want to keep them that badly, we'll let people keep them, and we'll support them with the service and parts and everything. They were trying to end that, you know, the notion of having parts and, you know, dealerships all over and service available. That's there's a great deal of expense in that, so they're trying to stop that. But the good thing about the car is it's beyond the lonely Maytag repairman. To have somebody that needs to service a car is one very, very idle person. I've had nothing go wrong with the car in all the years that I've had it.
It's kind of like the Maytag guy.
Exactly. It's a lonely Maytag repairman, even more so. You know, nothing really goes wrong with these cars.
So, listen, let me interrupt you for a minute because I'm trying to find it, the paper, which I have right here. But as of 20 minutes ago when I was reading the paper, Toyota is now in the number two position in the U.S., and all U.S. dealers are all the U.S. companies are dropping like rocks.
Yeah, they pulled ahead of Ford. You know, they've been offering this Prius for years. I was the first consumer in North America to get a Prius vehicle in August of 2000. It's a very good car. We're a two-car family. We're fortunate enough to have the resources to have one car for me and one for my wife, so we don't share a car. With a two-car family, with that extravagance, we're able to have complete mobility. By that, I mean when I need to go beyond the range of the electric car, you know, let's say 60 days a year, I say, honey, here's the keys to the electric. I'm going to drive the Prius and drive cross-country, drive to San Francisco, Vancouver, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, all those places I've driven to from Los Angeles, and done it economically and with very, very little pollution.
Oh, that's absolutely terrific. Well, I say that the reason that Toyota's moving up the scale by leaps and bounds is that I know that U.S. cars can't even be sold in a lot of the Asian countries because our emission standards are so shabby.
The emission standards, you know, have gotten better for the cars, certainly, and some of them are very good, certainly on the Priuses, and even some other cars are good, but it's the CAFE standards. It's the mileage requirements that I think are the bigger problem, Val. You know, the mileage on those cars is so poor on so many American cars, they just, they don't want them. If they don't have a law passed, you know, about the emissions, it's the law of the market that keeps people from getting them because, you know, with gas $7 a gallon in Europe, I mean, they can't afford to have a car that gets even 20 miles per gallon.
Back in the 1970s, I owned a Morgan. I don't know if you know those cars or not.
Know it very well.
That was my favorite car. And in those days, the Morgan that I had was, I believe, a 56 Morgan.
Yes.
It got 36 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, I had my version. I didn't have a Morgan. I had a Karmann Ghia, which got about 30 miles per gallon.
Right, I had those too.
Maybe 32. I can't remember. It got 30-something.
Yes.
And it was terrific. It was the hybrid of its day. I drove it around for years until I got in a horrible accident with it. And then I went, I don't know about that. You know, it was a very small car. A guy in a 67 Olds ran a stoplight, and he, you know, broadsided me, and I had a fractured femur. So I started thinking twice about fuel economy for a few years.
But so my Karmann Ghia saved my life, actually.
Yeah.
It was rear-ended by an 18-wheel paper truck.
Wow.
Freeway, and when it hit the engine, it put the engine in the back seat of the car. People may not know, but Ghias had the engines in the back.
I wished I had a rear end. I guess on the side didn't do so. And also, I don't know how many cars would do well in that situation with the 67 old plowing into the side of the car. I think I might have got my femur fractured in nearly any car I was in. So I shouldn't complain about the vehicle.
I think the really important thing here is that 30 years ago, we had vehicles that had very good gas mileage. And we need to just keep demanding that it's 30 miles a gallon or better. Just keep saying it and stop buying these things.
Yeah, we had better mileage, consistently better mileage for years, and then the 80s, it turned around. It was not a focus of the Reagan administration, and so the mileage started going, you know, south, or it's certainly stabilized. It didn't get better.
Uh-huh.
But we see now that these kinds of cars are certainly technically feasible. The Prius, I've gotten real world, not some sticker on the side of the car, not some readout in the dashboard. I'm talking about filling up the car and getting a pocket calculator out, and really computing it. I've gotten 58.6 real world miles per gallon in the Toyota Prius. Now that's really good.
Yeah.
If we were getting mileage like that, you know, in a great many of our cars, we wouldn't need to have this dependence on Mideast oil. You know, when you think about 15 of the 19 hijackers had Saudi passports from 9/11, I mean, you know, where does that money come from? It comes from oil. If you want to do something about terrorism, the single best thing I can think to do is stop sending so much money over there, and that would be my first act if I were in charge, would be to greatly reduce, if not eliminate, our dependence on Mideast oil.
Let me just shift gears with you for a minute. So how did you actually originally meet Dennis?
I met Dennis at an organization called Love is Feeding Everyone.
Oh, that was his. Yeah, with Valerie Harper.
He and Valerie Harper had started that group, and they asked me to come and help. I was doing a series called St. Elsewhere and wanted to be of service in some way because I was very grateful to have a show like that. And Dennis involved me in that, so I showed up whenever he needed help with life, whenever he or Val called me. And then we worked together this thing in Kalispell, Montana, with Amy Grant, who's a lovely young lady, and worked on that together, got to know each other even more, and I started to learn of his environmental commitment. I shared that commitment. We started to talk, and then in the late 80s, early 90s, he started designing and talking about these earth ships, these houses built out of, you know, recycled materials using tires as an envelope to force earth into to make it a rammed earth house, you know, within these tires. And so he built a house that way with solar on it and everything and gray water systems, and I was very, very impressed with that. I did a compliment to that in a way. I did my house that same time, 89 and 90. I did a retrofit in a 1936 house. You know, some people are going to be doing as Dennis did, which is to take and build on a piece of property a whole new structure, an environmental structure, which is great, and I encourage that. But a lot of people are going to do as I did and to do a retrofit on an existing structure. And so I took this 1936 house, made it very energy efficient, and it's really been a good thing, not just for the environment, for my pocketbook. I've saved a great deal of money in the long run.
Oh, that's amazing. I wanted to find out if Gail Ellen was here yet.
I am here. I'm here from, I'm calling from Alaska. We're just actually up on a huge boat. We've just seen some amazing whales and hearing their sounds and talking about environmental protection, Val. I was up here to see about the climate crisis, and we just saw the largest female whale that they've ever seen, and the dive is beautiful. And the things that are happening out here are very, very interesting, and I'm just really aligned with everything that Ed is saying.
Are you talking with the people there? You know, what are they noticing are the changes as the earth?
Well, I actually, you know, it's very interesting because the changes started to occur in 1990, I think it was 1992 when they had, no, 1964 when they had that 10 earthquake and the tsunami happened up here. That's when it really started, and I've been with scientists, and I was with the governor of Alaska, and talking about some of the things that have occurred, and when you see the difference in the glaciers, you can really see, you know, what's occurring. However, a very interesting thing is that the water is actually getting colder in some spots here.
Huh.
So, yeah.
So are the glaciers splitting, or what are they doing?
Well, we just go by the fjord, and the glaciers are falling, and it's a huge thundering noise. It's just an amazing thing to watch. It splits, and it the crystals are actually coming apart, and the forges drop into the ocean. And we went by the glacier bay yesterday, and the glaciers are blue, this magnificent blue color. It's the most amazing thing. And how that works is that all the other colors of the rainbow are absorbed in the ice, but this crystal blue is not absorbed and it reflects. So it's amazing. So I'm going to check in later and just really to stay in touch with you and in contact with you and keep our listeners advised.
Ed, do you have anything you want to ask Neil while she's there?
Yeah, my dear friend Neil Rhodes is up in Alaska right now, and I've been up there myself. It's so beautiful. The calving of those glaciers is something wonderful to behold, but I, like you, am very concerned about some of the changes there with the way that many of the glaciers are receding. They have photographs documented, and many people who have been traveling up there for many, many years, up in Alaska, explorers and what have you, who will tell you that the ice has receded. You don't need to go that far. You can see it in Glacier National Park in the continental U.S., you know, in the lower 48, you can see it. You can see it in Kilimanjaro. You can see it in South America. There's lots of problems with that. When the Larsen B ice shelf, you know, fell off into the ocean. And the biggest challenge, when you see problems like we're seeing, the potential in Greenland, you know, it's one thing when there's ice that's already in the water, when that starts to melt and break off. That's like ice in the glass. It doesn't raise the volume of the glass. But when you have ice that is on land now, and that starts to go into the ocean, that has the tremendous potential to alter, you know, the sea level in a very drastic and very detrimental way. And that's what so many scientists are concerned about, and it's something I'm certainly concerned about. You know, what's going to happen if that does indeed occur? And it's a cause of great concern.
Well, let me tell you what's going to happen, Ed, because what they're saying is that flat out that would be 21 feet. Okay, that takes care of Pacific Coast Highway.
Yeah.
Your area.
It's not good.
It's not good. And if I were a doctor or in a spaceship diagnosing planet Earth, I would say to everybody, you need to get an intensive care fast or the patient isn't going to make it.
I'm afraid so.
And, you know, Noah Brown of the UN told me 6-7 years ago, he said, Val, if people don't wake up and get going, Noah Brown was the in charge of the environment of the North American continent for the United Nations.
He's a dear friend of mine, a wonderful man.
I love him. So he's one of my favorite radio interviews ever. So this guy told me 10 years ago that we were done if we didn't get it handled by 2000. And then the last time I talked to him a year or two ago, he said, well, fortunately, I wasn't entirely right, but we have to move fast.
And I think we do. And here's the amazing thing. The best that the naysayers can come up with now, he says, well, yeah, there might be something happening with the climate, but we have nothing to do with it. I would ask them, why would you put a febrile patient in a sauna? But that, I mean, if there is some natural cycle occurring that's causing this warming, why would you add to it and put CO2 in the atmosphere which don't clearly warm it? I mean, that it's just crazy. The other big lie that I think is being told is that it's going to cripple the economy. I got news for you folks. There's jobs making compact fluorescent bulbs, energy-saving thermostats, double-pane windows, bicycles, electric cars, hybrid cars, windmill solar panels. Those are jobs, too. They're not jobs at an oil derrick. And we can't, you know, we have to retrain people and not leave the workers out in the cold. But I'll tell you something. There are jobs doing all those things I mentioned, the jobs of dignity, the good-paying jobs, and we need to refocus our economy. And I can tell you from my personal experience, everything that I've done for the quote-unquote for the environment, the electric cars, the public transportation I ride, everything, the bicycle, the solar, the hybrid, it's all been good for my bottom line. I don't have a lot of money, Val, but I don't need a lot of money. I can live on next to nothing because of investments that I made in the future years ago.
Oh, that's really great. I actually want to give, we got three live team members here that I want to give a chance to ask you a question. Debbie Ringchop, what's your question for Ed Begley?
Hi, Ed. This is Debbie. I got a question as far as more things that people can do out in their own homes and neighborhoods. How do they really get, like, a curbside recycling program going in their own neighborhood or get the right types of appliances? What are the best ways to really start saying, I want a community garden, whatever it might be, to create what they need?
I would say to people, first of all, the most important thing I want to tell people is to pick the low-hanging fruit first. Don't think, oh, I got to run out and get solar panels. I got to get an electric car and go into debt and find one, you know, and I can't afford a hybrid, but I'm going to do it anyway. Put one foot in front of the other. Do what you can. You don't run up Mount Everest. Do something today. Start small and build. That's what I did. I put in compact fluorescent bulbs, energy-saving thermostat, good insulation. I did all those things and built from there. And then finally, I did some of the big-ticket items like, you know, solar hot water and solar electric. So I urge people to do that. The only way that recycling programs happen in a community, we're very fortunate to have a very good curbside program in L.A., is because of citizens pressure. They pressure our leaders, and then the leaders finally get something done. In the meantime, whatever community you're in, nearly any community you live in, unless you're in a very rural part of the country, you can look up in recycling in the Yellow Pages. You can find a place that takes bottles and cans, what have you, and in a very fuel-efficient way, take it on your way to somewhere else. Just save it up in the garage if you have space or somewhere in the kitchen closet. That's what I do with my Styrofoam, because there's no curbside program for Styrofoam in L.A. I save my number 6 till when I'm going out in the Interstate 5 towards the City of Commerce. 2-3 times a year, I drop it off there. And so the people that don't have a curbside program, I would urge them to do that. Save it up, maybe save it with a bunch of other neighbors in one thing, and then take it in a fuel-efficient manner to a recycling a plant somewhere near you. And hopefully, unless you're in the middle of a very remote area, there will be one somewhere near you.
Oh, that's perfect. George, do you have a question of Ed?
Hi, Ed. I had a quick question. What about companies that are particularly environmentally friendly? Is there a list or a source that folks could find so that they might support those companies that are being eco-friendly?
You know, there are certainly some green guides and what have you put out by Friends of the Earth and NRDC. There's people, there's ratings, and I'm trying to think. There was a great group years ago, and I can't think of the name of it, that would rate companies for environmental activism, social conscience, animal rights, lots of different things, and I can't remember the name of it now, but there are such ratings. Maybe drop me an email, and hopefully my brains will start working later. Go to edbegley.com and click on Contact Ed, and I'll send you some information. I'm sure I'll be able to think of it in the time that will follow this radio show, and I'll tell you who rates companies as regards the environment.
Great. I appreciate that. And, Ed, folks can certainly encourage things to happen in terms of recycling and reusing at their workplaces as well.
Okay. Yeah.
A lot of companies have things that are going on.
We need that. We're almost out of time. I want to make sure that Cherie gets a chance here to ask you a question. Those were great questions, you guys.
Definitely.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, Cherie.
The question that I have is, you know, we are all very familiar with cans and glass and newspapers and magazines and cardboard to recycle, but what are some other things that are not real common that we could recycle that would make a difference?
Here are some other things I recycle. I recycle the plastic bags. Like it or not, you wind up with plastic bags. They bring the Los Angeles Times wrapped in plastic because of the lawn sprinklers. You know, so I save those up and I take them to, there's a place called Flair Cleaners here, and they will recycle them. Ralph's Markets takes them. Vons takes them. Some supermarkets take them. What they're looking for is their recycle bags, but they will take any recycled bag, any number 4 plastic. That includes dry cleaning bags or those kind of plastic bags for the grocery. They're all number 4 resin, and they'll take all those back. There's one thing you can do. You know, green waste, we're very fortunate to have a green waste bin in the L.A. area. They pick that up curbside, too, besides the blue bin, which takes all the stuff that you mentioned, all the cans and bottles and newspaper. I put all that green waste, not all of it, I put the thick stuff that would take a lot of time and energy to chop up, the twigs and all that stuff, in there. And the rest I compost. You know, composting is another good way for source reduction. The other biggest thing you can do, and this is bigger than any of them, I save the best for last, is pre-cycling. To look at things and buy stuff with less packaging, buy in bulk, to do all those kinds of things that will reduce your trash with your purchasing power when you're at the market, wherever you are. And so I do as much pre-cycling as possible before you buy something, and that will greatly reduce. I don't like putting all my newspaper and other, papers. I don't put that, all of it, in the blue bin where it gets mixed in with old cat food cans and all sorts of stuff, gets kind of contaminated, becomes a low-grade paper. We have a paper recycling company in L.A. in the valley where I live. It's called Alpha Recycling. I separate my white paper, my color paper, and a few other grades of paper. I take it in there. Then it gets the highest use rather than just some backing material for roofing shingles or what have you. It gets a very high use where it's made into facial tissue or new paper again or something else like that. It gets a very high use. So those are a couple of other tips in recycling. And styrofoam, there are places that take that in major metropolitan areas. And if you just save it in a garage, if you have space, or under stairs somewhere, you can take that in a couple times a year and eliminate all that number six from going in the trash.
And you can go to the grocery store, and then when they say to you paper or plastic, and you it's a single item or a couple, say neither, thanks.
You say neither, exactly.
It gets really, really easy, and they look a little surprised at first. Or you can carry your own bag with you.
Right.
But while we were having this conversation and talking about recycling, Ed, an email just came in. And by the way, you want to send us an email? Send it to val@wakinginupinamerica.com, and I'll ask the question on the air. So what just came in the middle of this was from the American Red Cross, Ed, and it says, urgent, blood supplies are critically low. Blood donors respond to critical shortage. $1,000 gas card drawing offered to spur donations. They've been calling all the time. So blood is something everybody has, and unless you've had hepatitis or something of that nature, or you've got your blood has been designated off limits for some reason, I'm going to say 90% of the people listening to this show can give blood. That's a great recycling, and your body will just grow more. You can actually, they've got new ways of giving it. So you can go in and give twice the amount, like twice a year instead of four times. So there you go. People should be going to your website at edbagley.com. Do we have one of your new movies coming out with Christopher Guest?
Yes, it's called For Your Consideration.
What is it?
It's about the award ceremony cycle, you know, the Oscars, the Golden Globes, all of that. And it'll be coming out in October. It'll be at the Toronto Film Festival in September. It's a very funny film with Christopher Guest, myself, Catherine O'Hara, Eugene Levy, the usual gang, Jane
Love Lynch. You guys.
Yeah, Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, Ricky Gervais from, you know, The Office. And it's a wonderful cast, and I'm very, very happy and proud to be in it. It'll be out in a few scant months.
And in case you don't recognize this wonderful trio, it's Best in Show and then A Mighty Wind are the two I remember.
Right. And now For Your Consideration is the new one, and I think you're going to like it. I hear it's very good. I haven't seen it myself, but I haven't been disappointed yet.
Now, you guys have a great sense of humor and a great sense of heart, and we appreciate what you're going to be creating. Ed and a number of the other people that are friends of Dennis's, we're all going to be creating an endowment for the Institute of Ecolonomics so that children can be taught in the schools the things that we're talking about today that can be done.
Right.
So that we'll send out a group of little eco soldiers.
Right.
And that's what's needed right now.
I think so.
So, Ed, thank you so much for being with us today. What an incredible experience. I want you to wait the 1 minute.
Sure.
Okay? Because we have Will Rogers talking. After Dennis's goodbye, I actually went over to Will Rogers' place on Sunset, and I met the leading Will Rogers gentleman, and here he is. And here he is.
There's a new Hummer 4 coming out soon. I hear it's incredible. Is that because it's a hybrid? Not in your life. Or that it has a pickup-style back for your barrels of oil. Now, right below that story was a story about the new movie called Death of the Electric Car. It occurred to me that the Hummer was getting all the positive press and the electric car the negative, which makes no sense to me. We have more plugs than we do gas stations, electric cars are quiet, and Hummers do everything but hum when you fire them up. Just think, gone with a combustion engine would be the end of that familiar question, can I change your oil? Yes, you can. Change it to a plug or a solar panel. Now look forward to the day when I pull up to the pump and I'm greeted by the Energizer Bunny and I say, charge it up. Now everyone knows that the auto industry makes money not by what you buy in the beginning, but by what falls off as you drive it. Note to the car manufacturers, if you think electric cars won't make you enough money because there's not enough parts to replace, just ask a golfer what it costs to add an air conditioner or a wet bar to their cart.
So, Ed, how'd you like that?
That was fantastic.
Isn't he amazing? He's on every week, and I found him after Dennis's goodbye party.
Great.
So if you want to use him in any way, you know, if you can figure out a way, this guy is available. And I love the way he does it, and I thank you for being on. And next week we're going to have Mike and Shelley on. So thank you.
Thank you, Val. Thank you all for your great questions and comments.
Okay, great.
Bye.
So there you go, Ed Bagley Jr. Dennis's friends, one of the things you'll notice is that they live their lives to make a difference and they walk their talk. You have to. That's the way it has to work. Lisa Molson of Family Matters has a message for you today. She was on a plane this morning, and she's on a plane right now, and she's actually taking her daughter back to California, because in California, where Lisa grew up, she was on the state championship basketball team at McKinley High School. And her daughter, Alicia, shows similar promise. In fact, when I was back there in Minnesota with her and her family, the recruiting coaches were coming by for Alicia. So mom is taking Alicia back to high school in that particular area, and she's also reconnecting with her sons. And what Lisa does is she's willing to get on the plane, do the things that need to be done to have a life that works. And she has been through so much with her family, because her family, like so many other families, was a shattered family. And Lisa was the one that said, listen, you know what, I'm going to pick up the pieces here. So she's been on the air with us for at least 4 or 5 years, and she's been picking up the pieces in a family, and that family is just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. So there you go, sweetie. Our blessings and our prayers and everything are for you as you fly through the air, making these transitions that are going to make your family a stronger and better place to be. And what Lisa will say is that it starts in the family. You create a strong family, you create a strong world, and that's where it is. So, Lisa Molson, you go for it, girl. Debbie Ringchop, our doctor for money. What an interesting show this has been so far, huh?
Absolutely.
I've got to save up, because I want one of those new Tesla cars. They're electric, and they cost $100,000. I don't have the money right now. What kind of, maybe you'll tell us how.
We'll certainly have to work on that. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today on our retirement segment is really, if you're going to build up some money, you have to partially become an entrepreneur. It doesn't mean that that's the only thing you're doing, but in order to be successful, you got to start taking on some of the actions that entrepreneurs do. And millionaires delegate. Most people think it's because they have the money to delegate, but really it's the other way around. The reason they have the money is because they delegate more things. You need to find people that will do things that you don't do as well and hire it out. If you can hire something out, then you have more time to do something that's more essential for your bottom line. So you want to learn a little bit more about what you have as your own work ethics. What are the things that work well for you? What are the things that don't? What's going to bring more money to you? Where should you put your time? And go ahead and hire somebody out to take care of your house or pick up the office supplies. Is it better for you to spend time actually writing letters or talking to people related to a business than it is to be sorting papers and buying supplies and cleaning up offices and things like that? Instead of trying to do it all ourselves, often we don't want to, give up control. That's one of the big issues that most people have. The other thing is, you think somebody might not do it quite as well as you. Well, it doesn't always have to be done to the perfection that we might have wanted for ourselves. But if we let other people do it, we start looking for people that have the skills, that love doing kinds of things that we're not as good at, or areas that we shouldn't be putting all of our time. So start looking for what part of your life can be creating new revenue to you, your family, your business, and start getting more of your tasks working essentially on those areas, and let other people take care of other things. It also helps build, say, your kids. They start to feel better when they have things that they become responsible for. They start to learn what they're good at. So you want to delegate more and, be able to make more wise decisions. Another thing is, if you have expertise, you don't necessarily want to be doing all your own taxes, figuring out all your own investments, trying to figure out all the legal aspects. Let the experts take care of those things. Hire the people to do the job for you, so that you can do the things that will help make a difference in your life. You'll see a lot more wealth come your way if you allow it to play out as a team. You need a wealth team. It's a team effort. So don't forget, we're all part of a team, so it's important to Let the team in. This is Debbie Ringchop, your doctor for money. Remember, you got to pay yourself first. Learn to become your own bank and enjoy the great riches you well deserve. And you can contact me for a financial plan through our website at www.saveinvestbuildretire.com or email me at debbie@wakingupinamerica.com or any of us toll free. You can call us toll free, all the editors at 866-RADIO-99. Back to you, Val.
So what basically you're saying here, if was to dissolve this down to one word, is delegate.
Delegate, delegate, delegate.
Okay, I think that that's important. I think it's a very important conversation.
And make a team and delegate.
There you go. So make a team and delegate. So maybe this is how we're going to take on the mess of the world. I'm just so dumbfounded by what I read in the paper and what's going on right now. It's just I'm not quite sure what to do with it all. I'm sure Cherie Ross, however, who has essential oils, do I need peace and calming or what do I need, Cherie? Cherie? My goodness, she must have gone into a dead zone.
No, yep, well, she's out of the dead zone.
Oh, good. What oil did you use?
To get out of the dead zone, awake.
I think this could be a bestseller.
Yeah, how to get out of the dead zone. Awaken. It's actually, that is an oil that is designed to work with the hypothalamus, the pituitary gland, and the pineal gland to actually stimulate the inner part of the brain to allow different aspects of the brain that you weren't able to access before to come forward and start to be more awake and utilized. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, I like it.
So what does that do? It increases creativity. It increases intuitive capacity and intuitive connection. It increases the quickness of your thoughts, and it increases your ability to, in your thinking, multitask simultaneously. Pretty fun,
just
huh?
Awake?
Awaken, yep.
Okay, and what are the actual oils in it?
It is a blend of blends. So it's a very rare, unique oil. There's over 30 oils in this blend. And it is a blend
is
of blends. The Awaken oil, it's
yeah.
Around, my guess is, I don't have the price sheet right in front of me.
Yeah, rough.
$30 to $35 for 250 drops, and you need about 2 drops a day, maybe 3.
So it lasts 130 days or so.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it'll easily last you 3 months.
Okay, and where do you apply it?
Right in the center of the forehead. 1 drop in the center of the forehead, 1 drop under the nose, and 1 drop back up under the occipital bone. You know that little bone that juts out in the very back of the skull where the skull meets the top of the spinal cord in the neck, way up there.
Okay, so the first person that gets to the website and signs up as a new subscriber and says, I want this Awake oil, I will send it to you without charge, and I will also send it to the 20th person.
Wow, that's huge.
How can I resist it when it's waking up in America, for God's sake?
And you know the other really awesome thing, Dr. Valerie?
Tell me.
It is not an oil just to be used during the day. It is an outstanding oil to be used at night. I know a number of people who process things in their dreams, Einstein being one of them. They literally gather information in their dreams. If you use Awaken oil before you go to sleep at night, you will have the most amazing dreams, just phenomenal dreams.
Okay, I'm really serious when I'm telling you this, so don't just chalk it up as radio chit-chat.
Nope.
Have a bottle put on my list and have them send it to me.
Okay.
Actually, have them send me two.
All right.
Okay?
No problem.
Great.
So,
and that's how easy it can be, especially if Sherry happens to be the person you're getting your oils from. I've been buying oils from Sherry for, I'm going to say, 5 years now, 4 years, something
yes.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And they produce amazing results when you have the right oils that are distilled properly with the proper plants. Yep. So the other thing that I wanted to mention today is in the last week I have gotten, I would say, over 30 calls, emails, requests on bee stings, wasp stings, any type of flying, stinging things. And believe it or not, on Monday, 2 attacked me and stung me with stingers intact in hand. in my hand. And so I was able to practice what I preach. And I can tell you right now, there are, and I, this is the amazing thing, I did not have this oil that I'm going to mention on me because of where I was. I had two other oils in my pocket that I used that worked just as well. So I'm going to give you some options here. There's a blend of oil that I've talked numerous times about its purification. Purification oil is a blend of six oils, and it has the capacity to stop a venomous reaction in the body, whether it's from a spider bite, whether it's from a bee sting, a wasp sting, a mosquito bite, a tick, whatever it is. It will literally stop the response in the body and allow the body to be stronger than the venom and literally kick it out or digest it and dissolve it quickly. And that is purification oil. But all I had on me was lavender, lemon, and Idaho balsam fir oil. So I put one drop of this very special lavender on, one that comes from Idaho, by the way. It's very high. It's a French lavender that we actually brought into Idaho, and it is producing even higher medical results grown up in a very sacred Native American reservation in St. Mary's, Idaho. Up in their sacred land, they have allowed us to plant it there, and the chemotypes are coming back even stronger. This beautiful French lavender from Provence being planted in a very sacred place on the top of the mountains in Idaho. So that lavender, as well as one drop of lemon and one drop of Idaho balsam fir, which comes right from the Idaho-Canadian border, way up there. And within seconds, the redness disappeared. It started to get white around the stings, push the stings up and out, and the pain was gone instantly. And this is very safe for babies. We've had very tiny babies outside, and the bees have landed on them and stung very tiny infants. Done this same regimen, or sometimes they'll put one drop of peppermint over top. And again, in seconds, you'll see the results. So if you're out and about and you're out picking berries, because this is definitely berry season right now, especially in the northern states, blueberries, huckleberries, mulberries, raspberries, strawberries, you name it, the berries are out, boysenberries, lingonberries, and the bees love, and the wasps love the berries. And it's also sweet corn time, and the bees love them as well. So if you're out picking for this wonderful organic food that we love to eat, bring along these essential oils. Purification would be my top choice. If you don't have that, bring lavender, lemon, peppermint, or Idaho balsam fir. Any of those will work very well. And if you have challenges with being outside, my favorite oil is basil. Remember, wonderful basil oil, absolutely one of the best for antihistamine response. So there you go, Dr. Valerie.
That's so cool. That is so cool. I was always afraid of poison oak when I was a kid. Bees, I have a good relationship with.
Oh, you know, poison oak and poison ivy, purification and lavender and basil, that combination together, you literally can watch it on your skin reversing.
Really?
Yes, you can watch it totally reversing, and the fluid, that nasty, I'm going to use this word, you know, I don't use it very often, but that nasty pussy stuff, that liquid, it will literally be pushed right out like a volcano. It's really cool.
That is fabulous. Listen, you guys, send me an email. I'm right here, val@wakingupinamerica.com. I'll ask any of the editors, and right now I've got an editor you may be emailing me for right away. His name is George Vicheski. His job is true leadership, and his we were talking about our different tones this morning. George is inspiration, possibility, and knowledge. That's Mr. Vicheski's tone. So with that, dear George, what have you got for us today?
Hi, Val. Today I wanted to talk about the language of leadership. It was very interesting. We were doing a workshop last week with a group of first-line supervisors, this group of people that had been promoted from within their groups. They were now responsible for the work of others, and they were beginning that process, and our workshop is called Jumpstart. It's a way of looking at your first 90 days in that first supervisor-manager role to help you get to a point where you can add value much more quickly. And there are a lot of changes that happen when we become responsible for other people. We certainly know that in our families. We also know that in our volunteer organizations. We know it in our organizations. But there are some key things that leaders in those roles do. Part of it is that a leader is looking to say, okay, what's the current state of affairs? How do we make progress? So they're always looking for better ways of doing things and recognizing that frequently the people in a group have ideas about better ways to do things. The difference is they don't know how to implement it. They don't know how to make that happen. People who are in supervisor-manager roles have the opportunity, because they're at a higher level in the organization, they have an opportunity to take those good ideas and help put them into practice. And as we were doing the workshop, one of the participants said, well, George, how do I remember this stuff? And all of a sudden it struck me that one of the leaders that we talked to when we did our book, True Leaders, when we said, well, how do you remember things? He said, I actually have a number of quotes, inspirational kinds of quotes. He said, and I began to blow them up into a little bit bigger size so people could read without their glasses and put them around the water cooler. And he said, as I put up some quotes, then other people in the office began to put up quotes in different places in the office. And as I was telling the story, I said, you know, there's that old adage, out of sight, out of mind. Well, what happens when we keep it in sight? In other words, we put it up someplace that we can see it. It's in sight. As we then experience our day at work, frequently by looking at that quote or that picture or that framework, we actually will gain some insight. We will see what's happening in a different way. And when we see it differently, we will act differently, and we will end up getting different, more positive outcomes. So whatever it is you'd like to remember, make it something colorful. Make it clear. Make it crisp. Post it someplace that you will regularly see it. And as you keep it in sight, keep track of the insights that you're gaining. Now, this segment has been brought to you by True Leader Coach, Inc., and any listener who will email us will also receive a free copy of a book called Taking Charge, Lessons in Leadership. It's a collection of interviews with various leaders and leadership experts. I know that there's information there that will benefit them. So just email us and we'll send them a copy.
And you want to email him at george@wakingupinamerica.com, and he'll pop that right off to you. And make sure you put in your telephone number and your address and, you know, the kinds of stuff you'd put into somebody's files, because you really want to be in George's address book. I promise you that. This is Dr. Val, and it's been quite a wild and woolly week for me, because the comment I want to make on is the life of Caressa Carlstead. Caressa passed away yesterday at 1:25 in the middle of the night, and a lot of the friends that were there had actually been friends of Caressa's for over 50 years. We actually grew up in high school and in neighborhoods together, and we did scouting together, and we did all kinds of things together, and we remained friends from those early years. Caressa lived around the corner from me, and I did Mariner Girl Scouts with her. Frances, who was there, was a friend of hers from high school. Naomi met her in high school. Barbara Abrash, the writer, she and Caressa were in book clubs for years, and we all knew each other, and we all got together, and we'd all celebrate when anyone would arrive in town. And I would have to say that Caressa probably is the most profound example of what happens when you've created a community in your life. She lived her life doing Meals on Wheels. So she was the director of Meals on Wheels in Westwood for, I'm going to say, at least, I think it was 25 years she did that, made sure that the elderly got given their meals. And she and her dear husband, Jim, practiced Gurdjieff's ways, and that's a very interesting conversation all of its own if you want to look it up. It's Gurdjieff is quite well known from the early days. And they lived their lives simply and powerfully and with integrity. And in February of this year, Caressa was diagnosed with a very nasty kind of malignant brain tumor, and her greatest sadness was that she lost her ability to be able to read. That's the first thing that went. So since February, her family, a very large and generous and kind family, have spent their time helping their mother go through the process called, well, can we, is this reversible? All the things that are involved in that, to adapting to her going to a wheelchair and then being in a bed and then labored breathing and things of that nature. So she's gone through that process, and in that process, Jim kept meticulous detail and sent emails, kept us all posted, and I know there were over 250 people on his email list that cared about what was happening for the Carlstead family and what was happening for Caressa Carlstead. Caressa Carlstead is not a name that, like Ed Bagley or Linda Gray or somebody else that you might know, or Tom Hanks or whoever. Caressa Carlstead worked powerfully in her own world, being an extraordinary human being. And friend Barbara Abrash described it best yesterday as we were, Caressa was lying in state in the little room that she was in, covered with a quilt, a very lovely quilt that had been made, a handmade quilt. And as she was lying there in peace, Nancy and Barbara and Naomi and I were standing there with our arms around each other, and Barbara said, I think a chunk of the universe just fell off, never to be replaced. And it did indeed, because those people that were on the mailing list, those people were people that would stop at the Carlstead house whenever they came to town, and when they did, we would have a party. So our hub has left us. None of us quite in the position to take over being a hub. So to the dear hub that left at 1:25 in the morning with her family present, her friends had left at varying hours during the day and night, we thank you for having come here to planet Earth and for having given us such an amazing time. And when I saw the picture that Barbara had, that she brought over to the house at you at 14, I just want to tell you, such a beautiful woman you are, and you were, and I'm just so glad that I met you. And I ask the blessings of the radio audience for Caressa's family, and there will be so many people missing her. And I pray that we come in and we create our own hubs, and maybe there's a waking up process here that's happened for all of us. We all seem to feel more of a desire to make things happen. Caressa was the one, now we have to be. So isn't it another case of recycling here? We have Caressa's spirit has gone to higher places. Her daughter Cindy is an American Indian, and I don't remember if it was Cindy or somebody else who just said Caressa had to leave. She was needed someplace else. So we're the ones that are here, you know, and we're the ones that have to take a stand, and we have to make a difference. I was talking to Ed before the show, and I said, this is so upsetting when you see the condition of the oceans as well and everything that's going on, and you watch the debris, and they're pulling the dead animals out of the ocean, and they're bleeding and all of this such. This is what we've done. This is what we've turned things into, and it's now time to tag. I ask you to go green. Tag. Turn America green. Turn yourself green inside your body by creating an acid interior. Let's turn ourselves green as we talk to each other, and we do that in kindness. Let's pick up trash. Let's do all the things that have to be done. Let's go like Gail Ellen is and check it out and see what's actually happening. The sound of those icebergs crashing into the ocean, those icebergs are temporarily making the water cooler, but since there's no icebergs for the sun to reflect on, it's going to go straight into the water and heat it up faster rather than bounce it off. So we're going to have to recycle the planet. This has certainly been a recycling show. We have a couple minutes left in the program, and I wanted to invite George, if you have anything else you'd like to say, or Cherie or Debbie, this is the time.
Hi, Val. This is George. As you were telling the story about your friend, I was thinking of when Pope John Paul II passed away. He died with such dignity, and I was talking to my wife, Bobby, about it, and she said, you know, Pope John Paul II and Mother Teresa are now dancing the polka together.
That's a really nice thought, George.
Isn't it, though? Because, you see, we live here on Earth, and somehow, some way, we all have an opportunity to make a difference. But eventually, we do move on, and when we do, we leave the infirmities of this world, and they're dancing the polka.
They're
smiling down at us.
To get out our shovels, George, and start shoveling, because, my God, if you said this Ocean's article in the Times, the series is another one today, they got graphic pictures. I don't even know what I was telling Ed. I don't know where to start. And he said, wherever you can. So, Cherie or Debbie, any 2 cents or 5 cents or a dollar or whatever the inflation has taken it to now?
Valerie,
this is Deb. I think that really we just have to all start to take a look in our pocketbooks and say, I should only be spending my money on things that are ecological, that are really economic good for the system, not just the convenience that we've had in the past. We need to really take a stand and not allow ourselves to continue to use the stuff that becomes junk, that's harming the environment. It's our world, and we're going to be living in it for a while. We want to have something there that's quality to live in.
Great point. I wanted to see if we can slip Cherie in here. I heard you start to speak, Cherie.
I was just going to ask if you had that beautiful quote handy from Wayne Dyer.
From Wayne Dyer. Okay.
I think that would be a wonderful thought.
See if I can get to the scent.
A wonderful thought to
let's see.
Today's show on.
Okay, wait a minute here. See how fast I can do it. Here we go.
Yep, the August 1st calendar, Wayne Dyer thought.
Cherie.net. No, that's the wrong one.
Well, anyways, what it does is lately I have been getting lots of emails on people whose pets are dying, and their hearts are just tore up. So this will help those people.
Okay. The universal mind was and is formless. It's the pure energy of love, beauty, kindness, and creativity, and it can't die. There is no form, no death, no boundaries, no deterioration, and the possibility of it waste, and no possibility of it wasting away. And this program has been produced by Editors on Air, our radio partners. James Murphy in Memoriam, our executive. Yes. Ed Bagley, you rock. Thank you for today. And you're not crazy anymore. Rock. And to the team at Voice America. And for Almost Ordinary People. Better friend to listen. Bagley would say, let's keep making things more simple.
This is for you. This is for all in you. Four and two. Now your heart is open.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on VoiceAmerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.